ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातम् सहगणा रघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्विताश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Among the things I spoke about yesterday morning was Srila Prabhupada explaining that although people attend Kumbh Mela with the idea of getting liberated, it's not necessarily so, even though it's said in Shastra that one is liberated by bathing at the particular place at that particular time. But Srila Prabhupada said that the door of liberation is open, but you still have to go through it. It reminds us of Gita, Swarga Dwaram Apavritam. The door to heaven is open. So if the Kshatriyas fight and they're successful, then they enjoy the earth. And they perform a pious activity by fighting, if they're fighting for the sake of dharma. And if they die, then they go directly to swarga. Actually, if you die, it's better in one sense, because then you go to swarga directly. Because if you remain here, you might do some impious activities on the way. Also, we have a similar thing here in South India on Vaikuntha Ekadashi. The door is open in Sri Rangam. The door is open, the door to Vaikuntha. You can go through that and then you go to Vaikuntha. So many people will go on that day. Actually, any time you're just being in Sri Rangam, you're already in Vaikuntha, if one has the eyes to see. Coming into the presence of the Lord, is that not enough to go to Vaikuntha? It depends on one's attitude. Certain people who are referred to in the press in India, in the English editions, as minority community. Certain members of that minority community came to Sri Rangam some centuries ago and devastated and destroyed everything. So they didn't get liberation by any means by doing that. Although maybe it's a funny thing, they think it's a pious activity to do things like that. They exult in that kind of thing. So one has the opportunity, one's opportunity for liberation and going to the spiritual world is certainly enhanced by doing so. But still, one has to desire to go. It may be that someone They have all opportunity to go to the spiritual world, but they don't desire to. The case of Tukaram. His wife was, throughout his life, his wife was opposed to his Krishna consciousness. So at the last stage, when he had to go to the spiritual world, and the vehicle came to take him, he offered to take his wife also, even though she wasn't Krishna. But she didn't want to go. So she didn't go. She had all opportunity to go. ISKCON Calcutta, 1970s. I'm talking about, what, about 78, 79. We had two hired accountants who'd come every day, 6 days a week, and sit in the old system. He'd sit on the gadi there, cross-legged. Everyone did that. In the cloth shops, it would be like that. They'd sit there and they'd do their account. All in, everything handwritten in those days. Das was one and Das Gupta was the other. Typical Bengali kayastas. So they came every day. When they came in the temple, they'd put their hand to pranam to Radha Govinda and sit on the garden and do their work. Pleasant people, but no interest in Krishna consciousness. Every day they'd take Mahaprasad of Radha Govinda at midday. And they'd work diligently during their working hours, and during their lunch break they'd talk all nonsense among themselves. No interest in Krishna consciousness. So full opportunity. So one day, it happened to be the day of Ganga Sagar Mela, and one of them, I can't remember which one, taking permission, took a day off and went to Ganga Sagar. And on that day there are hundreds of buses going from Calcutta to Ganga Sagar. So he went there, and next day he came, he was very happy. You could see he's very happy. He said, "Now I'm liberated. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do anything else." He says, because he took bath at Ganga Sagar on that particular day, and now I'm liberated. And every day he has the opportunity to be in Krishna consciousness, no interest. And now I'm liberated. I don't have to do anything else. So I guess he'll go on at home. No doubt he ate fish, being a typical Bengali. Go on with his life. Now I'm liberated. He was very happy. He had faith that he was liberated. But Tirtha Buddhi Salele, he was in that category. The whole thing is to take a bath. It's stated in Shastra, which is why people go, they have faith. You go there to Ganga Sagar, in particular on that day, take a bath, and you're liberated. But actually, the real thing is to hear from the sadhus there. If there are any sadhus there. There'll be plenty of sadhus there begging, but not that type of sadhu. So we can see how much need there is for actual preaching at the holy places. And ISKCON has established centers in various holy places in India. Srila Prabhupada's temple in Vrindavan. What was the reason that he established that temple? I mean, there may be many reasons, but one particular reason he wrote in a purport to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anyone remember? To show that Gaur Nitai are Krishna Balaram. They're non-different. Brajendra Nandanjay Shachishuta Hoiloshe. Balarama Hoilo Nitai. To demonstrate this. There are other reasons he gave also, that the elderly people of the world can come and retire. One of the reasons he wanted to preach to the people of Vrindavan by showing actually how devotional service should be performed. And that's, it's had its effect. The the standard of deity worship at Krishna Balaram Temple, these lectures, so-called, is clearly far higher than what was going on in many temples with the, we won't include Radharaman here, with most temples, let's say. And so, Smarahari Prabhu, he was living in Vrindavan in the 1970s. And then he was back in Britain, where he came from. And then after some many years, he again came back. And he met some of the people he knew from those days in Vrindavan, Goswamis, the temple proprietors. And one of them said to him that, Prabhupada, he forced us to improve our deity worship out of shame. Because actually it used to be very common, not only in Vrindavan, many places you go, the whole place is dirty, and even the deities and old clothes, and it looks like they're not changed. So Prabhupada lifted up the whole standard of deity worship and the whole mood of devotion. There's a book written by one scholar, Charles R. Brooks, called The Hare Krishnas in India, although it's actually about ISKCON in Vrindavan. And one of the comments he made, the effect of ISKCON in Vrindavan, was that among the residents of Vrindavan, I'm talking about the people who are born there, there are many who come and become a resident by choice, but those who are born there, just like the merchant community is an important part of the people who are born in and raised in Vrindavan. So he said among these kind of people, a marked effect of the presence of ISKCON is that among them, it's prestigious. It's subtly, it's not that people go around boasting, but it's become prestigious to be devotional. If apart from your doing your business, you also chant with a mala and get initiated by a Vaishnav guru, that's considered prestigious. So you can see that Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to preach in India, reviving people's natural Krishna consciousness and having functional ISKCON centers at holy places, not only in the cities, but of course some of the cities are holy places also, but Srila Prabhupada did that in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, he wanted to do in Puri, he wanted to do in Kurukshetra, and there are so many holy places, we could have temples everywhere, every town and village. So yesterday I spoke about tirthas which descend from the higher worlds to this earth, that are recovered from the sea, that manifest from the earth or from the mountains, or who just went there, like Ranganatha Swami. He went there from Ayodhya, he was en route to Sri Lanka, and he stopped at Sri Rangam and didn't ever move. Although, during the time when a certain minority community attacked that place, then he was in the jungles. But his original form was there, hidden. Then, various ways in which the Supreme Lord manifests himself. Supreme Lord and his representatives, like Ganga, Kaveri, demigods, the various ways they manifest themselves. He very kindly does so. Another way that tirthas come into existence is that not that God comes himself exactly, but that he's called by men. Please be present here. I'm talking about building temples. That's another. The essence of a tirtha, Krishna's name is Tirthaka, who makes tirthas, but he, another name for him is Tirtha. He himself is the means by which one crosses over the ocean of material existence. So he himself is a tirtha, and the essence of all the tirthas is his presence. How can anyone cross over this material world except by his mercy? So he manifests himself in certain places, and he may come by the request of his devotees also. And apart from in holy places, there are created holy places, we could say. It used to be that kings, they were the richest people, and they were expected, especially big kings. Of course, a king could be a king of four or five villages also. But big kings, they're expected to use the wealth that they take from, mainly from taxing the people. It can be also from plundering, but that's not good. Plundering another kingdom. Mainly from taxing the people. It may be gifts from other kings, from fines also that they levy. Mostly from taxes. So they're supposed to give it back in a material way also. They give to brahmanas, who may then give to others. They give to Shudras, just like on a religious occasion, they'll give their clothing to Shudras. In a time of need, they stock grains and then they distribute them if a harvest fails. But they're supposed to give religiously also, ultimately for the, this is Varnashram society, that the king, as the representative of God, maintains the people physically and helps them to develop religiously also. So one way of doing that is by performing major yajnas, in which the endeavors of the whole society is utilized. Everyone has a part to play, including the Shudras. They have to make the utensils. They're the ones who work to make the grains. And there are so many things. They have to build the pavilions. They have to erect the pavilions for visitors who will come and serve them, different Shudras. So everyone has a part in that. The Vaishyas have a part by they give the grains and ghee which are needed for that. The Kshatriyas are the ones who organize it all, the kings, and the Brahmanas are the ones who actually perform the yajna. So it's a way in which the whole society can come together to worship God. Now, another way is by building temples, a bridge to a higher world. And in the temple, one should be able to experience a higher level of consciousness. It's not meant to be like a museum. In some churches in the West, people are taken around, and Angkor Wat in Cambodia, people are taken around on guided tours, and they explain what this picture means and what this statue means and the history and all this. And it's something to see out of curiosity. But churches and temples are not, especially we're talking about major temples here. Of course, there are little temples just in the village. There can be some little stone or something, and someone puts something above it, and it's a little temple, and someone comes once a day and waves some incense, and that's a temple also. Or in people's houses, they may worship very devotedly or perfunctorily or whatever. But we're talking here especially about big temple. The whole idea is to create a religious atmosphere. That when we come in, there's a certain feel about it. Just like if we go to the bus stand, there's a certain feeling about it. The bus stand people go, and everyone's going here and there to different places. If we go in the school, there's a certain feel about it. Everyone's come for education. If we go in the bazaar, I've got a spider here. Feels like a spider. If we go in the bazaar, there's a certain feel about it. It has its own atmosphere. It's a commercial atmosphere. And then it's a different commercial atmosphere to if we go in the stock exchange, because it's ordinary people buying vegetables and fruits. And in the stock exchange, it's stock traders, and brokers and all this. So that's a very intense and stressful mood. So in the temple also, we don't expect to go in the temple and it has a commercial mood. Sometimes people become upset if they go in the temple and they're harassed for donations. They don't feel very comfortable about that. When we go to the school, we go in a certain mood and we expect to be reciprocated like that. We go to the bazaar, we speak with the person selling vegetables and we don't expect them to get up and do jugglery tricks. You may go to some entertainment show for that, but you went to the bazaar for a certain purpose, which is to buy vegetables, and the vendor, he talks in a certain way and you talk in a certain way. It's all understood. So you go. When we go to the temple, we expect there'll be a spiritual atmosphere. So it's not just the building, although the way the temple is built also contributes to that. That's why in Vastu Shastra, how to construct a temple in a certain way. Even the churches in the Western world, there are various styles of architecture at different periods and different places, but they're distinct from other buildings. A difference is here in India, in the Vallabh Sampradaya, they have the Haveli. Haveli just means a house, a home to live in, which were built like that. From outside, they may not look any different to any other house. So the idea behind that, one thing is it's Nandalai. It's a house, Nanda Maharaj's house, because they treat Krishna as the son of as a boy, young boy. They have them, and it's also said he was built like they were built like that because many of them were built during times of persecution by a certain minority community. That if they'd have seen temples, not going to say who they are. If they saw temples, their favorite spot was destroying temples. So to avoid that. But in general, the temple, it has a distinctive appearance and distinctive design which distinguishes it from other buildings. If it looks like an office building or a shopping mall or a residential building, then it won't have the same feel about it. Although out of necessity, Srila Prabhupada in the Western world, he converted, or he had his disciples convert buildings which were built for other purposes into temples for Krishna. The first temple, well, there's no deity worship there, but the first premises, we can say, of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness were in a converted storefront in New York City. Although in the early days, very early days of ISKCON, even before Srila Prabhupada had followers, he had the plan, and he was trying for that, to construct an Indian-style temple in New York. And he was negotiating, he was trying to get... There was one merchant who was prepared to give the money for it, a merchant in India. He was prepared to give the money, but then the government of India wouldn't allow him to send the money outside of India, because in those days it was hard to send money outside of India. Everything was controlled. The government controlled that very much. India's changed now. There's a lot of money flowing back and forth. But in those days it was a very controlled economy, and not many things were imported. So Srila Prabhupada wasn't able to do that, but his original plan was to build it before he had any movement. He wanted to Padmapat Singhania, that was the name of the merchant he was in contact with. So he had this, and also he requested Sumati Muraji also for this, but they're unable to do so because of government regulations. So then Srila Prabhupada, he had his disciples take over many churches, because at that time Christianity was in decline, and there were many churches which they couldn't afford to, the institutions which owned them couldn't afford to maintain them. Because there weren't enough people coming, and maybe they didn't have enough staff either to maintain them, so they were willing to sell them. And in several places, Toronto, in Los Angeles, was the first. And actually, in Los Angeles, Srila Prabhupada, because they had a church with a pulpit where the priest gives a talk, and then the benches for people to sit on. And Prabhupada wanted to keep that so that people, ordinary American people, could come and sit down, and they had stained glass windows, no doubt with Christian motifs. And Prabhupada wanted to keep that. He thought that would be very good. You can invite people to come and they can hear the message without having to sit on the floor, which, especially at that time in America, was very foreign to people. And up to the present time, it's a very informal thing to do. That if you're going to sit with someone for business or anything formal, any government office, you don't sit on the floor. You sit at table and chairs. So and many other buildings also that were purchased regular buildings, you could say. The spectacular Fisher Mansion in Detroit, in Philadelphia also a large residential house. The design of temples, which are custom-built temples, they're built for the purpose of being a temple from scratch, not converted. They have their particular design, although there are some people who have tried to make some fusion between ancient and modern styles. But the Vastu Shastra gives the how the temple. Especially we're talking about major temples here, large temples, which are meant for people to attract people to come, and maybe even come from a long distance. As in regular Tirtha or ancient Tirtha sthans or pilgrimage sites. It's a known place to visit for religious reasons. Many of the major holy places that are still, or major temples that are still in operation, because of course many of the major holy places in North India were destroyed by a certain minority community, members of a certain minority community, so that at Ayodhya, Varanasi, Mathura, and possibly thousands of other places also, there were many, many temples destroyed. Here in South India, that scourge didn't affect. So still there are many. People who come from North India and see the temples of South India, they're often surprised. Oh, such big temples. But there used to be in North India also. And I even just like at Somnath, the temple was rebuilt several times, and after some time, I suppose they thought that, well, there's no use to build a big temple again, because members of a certain minority community will again come and destroy it. And even the present one that was built shortly after India's political independence, not a very big temple, but previously they used to have very big temples in North India also. But here in South India we find that the major big temples, or they're at already established holy places. Sri Rangam was a holy place before the present temple was built. Same, so many. Chidambaram, Rameshwaram, Kanyakumari, there are so many of them. So the temples were built, and that becomes a focal point for people who visit that place. And of course in Kumbakonam there's not one temple, there's several. Kanchipuram also, there are two main temples, Shiva temple, Vishnu temple. There are many, and in any holy place there'll be so many. In any place in India there'll be so many temples. But the prominent temples, they become a focal point for pilgrims when they come. It's like in Varanasi, before the temple was, the present temples, or the temples that were destroyed of Bindu Madhava and Vishwanath were there. It's still, people don't come only for that, but they come for primarily for bathing in the Ganga, and but then visit to the Vishwanath temple, Vishveshva, as it's called in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's a must for one who's visiting there. So several temples have been built in course of time. And in Varanasi there's so many Shiva temples, and so many. But that one is still the center. So the building of temples is generally in places which are already holy places. But then if a king establishes a city, definitely he's going to build a big temple also. Nowadays the kings aren't there and they aren't building, so temples are built by institutions. Especially ISKCON is famous in India for temple building. More than any other society, ISKCON's well known for that, and we solicit donations from mostly from merchants, from the general public. So they may build it in some place. It's like at Hampi, and probably there was something holy there before, because wherever you go in India, there's always something holy not too far away. But because it's required that people, they have to go to temples. They may go to Tirthas on some special occasion, but so they can regularly visit, then big temples are required. And in the holy places, big temples are constructed. That's the king's duty to do so, and it's also a sign of his power and glory, that he may be remembered for building a big temple, and at the same time, that is a great act of piety on the king to build such a temple. And it also gives economic stimulus that so many people are employed in the construction, and afterwards so many people are employed in the maintenance, the day-to-day running of the temple. Not only, of course, brahmanas, but so many others. And that's here in South India, that's very much a part of the temple communities surrounding the temples. Everyone has their role to play. The brahmanas have a role to play, and then the shudras have a role to play. Everyone in the rituals also. So it gives, building a temple gives a gives a spiritual dimension to the whole society, and it's also a very good way for the, even from the political point of view. And of course, I'm not saying the kings did it solely out of selfish motives, but it's all interlinked, because they can unite the people in service to God. And we know that at Tiruvananthapuram, Anantapadmanabha temple, the kings who built that temple and the kings who oversaw the running of that temple for generations, they were not kings. How is that? Because the whole kingdom was belonging to the Lord. And just they thought, we're just servants, we're administrating on his behalf. Same thing in Jaipur. The kings, they build the temple, and it's like Bharat with Sri Ram, that he's officially the king, but he's administrating on behalf. The real king is Rama. So in the same way, the kings, although they ruled with opulence and power, but they presented themselves and they felt themselves to be servants of the Lord, as are everyone else in the kingdom. It's not that everyone in the kingdom is here to serve me, but I am here to, I have got this role by my previous activities in previous lives. I have been born in this situation where I have to serve the Lord as a king. And someone else has been born in the situation where he's taken birth as a brahmana, he has to serve as a brahmana. Someone else is born as, due to his previous activities, born in the family of a shudra. So it's all, the understanding is we're all here to serve the Lord. And the temple gives facility for everyone to do that. Swakarmana tamabhya cha. For everyone to serve the Lord by their work. And the feeling is there that also that we're all, it's not that there's some big king out there exploiting us, but he also feels himself to be a servant. And he brings everyone in that mood, and then that unites the whole society. And this Srila Prabhupada also, he so many times he gave this idea how the whole of human society can be united in Krishna consciousness. That that everyone, what is that? That Eiko Shastram Deviki Putra Gitam. Eiko Mantras Tasya Nama. I missed one line. What is it? Eiko Deva. Deviki Putra Eva. Eiko Mantras Tasya Nama Niyani Kamapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva. So everyone chants the same mantra. The one Shastra, Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada, in his summarizing his introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he quoting this verse, he said, let there be one God for the whole world, Krishna. Let there be one Shastra, Bhagavad Gita. Let there be one mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra. Let there be one work, service to the Lord. So the idea that everyone's work, if it's centered on Krishna, that will bring peace and harmony in human society. So the temple is built like that, a focus where everyone, their service is centered on Krishna. We're here to serve Krishna. And of course, maybe Shiva temple also. If they have that conception that Shiva is supreme. So that conception, it very much brings everyone together. That was very much a feature, as I remember, when I was first admitted in this movement in 1975 in London, just outside London, Radha Gokulananda. The devotees would speak like this and feel like this, that we're all here to serve Radha Gokulananda. It's very pronounced in the central London temple for the service of Radha Landanishwara, that everything, the consciousness was very strong. We're all here conjointly to serve Radha and Krishna. And then everything we do, all the service, it's connected to Krishna, consciously connected to this Krishna. Not some Krishna somewhere, Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam, you're looking up there, but this Krishna, just here, this Krishna, we're all serving him together. So that gave a great sense of unity and purpose and Krishna consciousness. So that's the consciousness that will carry us from this world to another world, and that's why building temples and inviting the Lord, he doesn't have to come, he's not obliged to come, but he kindly comes to accept our worship if we are eager to serve him. And in this way, establishing temples which act as tirthas, by which people can cross from this world to the spiritual world, or even entering them if the atmosphere is such, then we feel, and actually that atmosphere should be there. When we enter a temple, we should feel it's very different. Oh, I've entered the spiritual world. It's so wonderful. Oh, so nice. My own experience, first time in this lifetime, entering Krishna's temple, Bhaktivedanta Manor, it was around this time of year, 1975. And even before I entered the temple, the smell of incense pervading the whole building. After I was living there, I didn't even notice it. But when I first went there, oh, such a nice smell. And then go inside and see beautiful pictures of Krishna. You don't see that here in India you may see, but I'd never seen. And then happy devotees, and then just everything. The whole experience is something divine. And we feel transported to the spiritual world. So that atmosphere, then we feel already we're in the spiritual world. Then why, what are we talking about crossing over? We're already there if we can align our consciousness with the atmosphere in the temple. So for this reason, the kings, they do a great service by building temples. Hare Krishna. It's quite apt for all of you building a temple here, huh? such a discussion to keep in context, and hopefully enthusiasm, give you more enthusiasm to go on with that project. What is that? Shri Bhakti. Shri Bhakti. Kalo Shri Bhakti Marge Koti Kantakaruta. In Kali Yuga, on the path of devotion, it's blocked by thousands of thorns. So you could never expect that the construction will be all shut down for 6 weeks. Now it's shut down. So many things. But there's a solution to that also. The solution is the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So, otherwise it's impossible. Unimaginable. That Mukham karoti vacha lang pangung lang hayate karim yat kripa tamahang vande Sri Chaitanya Maheshwara. That's one version of that prayer, that by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Controller, a dumb man can speak poetry, a lame man can cross over mountains. So an unknown person can come to some largely unknown town in South India from an unknown country, Croatia, and build a magnificent temple. Who would believe such a thing? Even when you were 16 years old, if someone had said such a thing to you, you wouldn't even be able to imagine. Everything's going on by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's the great hope. There's nothing hopeful in this world, only the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhuvyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.
His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami Maharaj ki jai.